My name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. On this edition from Radioland, I sit down with my good friend Jeff Janowitz, and we continue kind of where we left off.
Me.
Sounds good, yeah. It sounds fine. Yeah, you don't need headphones for this. We can wing it. No, the solo podcast I did on this thing.
What's the subscription? Have you looked yet?
Does iTunes give you subscription numbers?
I don't know. I would imagine they have to give you if you're providing it, right?
I haven't seen anything.
We have to figure that out.
I finally just got Joe hooked up to it. So. She's discovered the world of podcasting. I told her all she had to do was type in a name, and away she goes.
You know, my favorite thing is just to look up a comedian that I've always liked, because most of them have podcasts now.
Comedians and radio people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're both, right?
Well, does internet radio count?
Yes.
I was told today that Billboard magazine, the last stalwart of industry rags, if you will, made its first mentions of real internet radio being a factor in the death of terrestrial back in September.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, you don't hear that much, though. It's like they keep sweeping that under the rug. I'm surprised Billboard acknowledged it.
I am, too. But here's the thing, is that it was explaining the fact that internet radio, much like what Radio Memphis has been doing, has been the place to go for indie music.
Right.
Indie and unsigned.
Well, I think it's starting to... Oh, yeah, it's starting. I mean, it has been evolving to that. I mean, you know, internet radio kind of goes back, as my buddy Joe pointed out, it kind of goes back to, the early 2000s when Winamp had that Shoutcast service where you could just play stuff. Of course, it was not necessarily legal to just play your collection and broadcast it out to the world, but then...
They had no way of controlling it.
But, no, I don't think that ever got... That never came under fire, unlike Napster and all that other stuff.
Right.
But, you know, apparently there are indie stations out there that have, you know, evolved from doing that. But you know, I think what's changed is the record industry has changed.
That's like, one way to
like,
put it.
Well, yeah. I mean, internet radio is now becoming a viable outlet for independent bands looking to get somewhere because they're not going to get anywhere with the big labels. They're just not.
No, and getting, you know, I was on a conversation the other day with a guy who was talking about this thing he was putting together here in town, and he was wanting to get all these musicians, and he said our goal is to get some of these guys signed.
Right.
And I'm like, are you sure you really want to, are you sure the artists want that?
Right.
You know, it just doesn't, it's not what it used to be.
Well, you know, it just, yeah, if I was an artist at this point, I want distribution. I would love for somebody to back me in a recording studio, but
yeah, that's about it.
But I'd rather go partners in with whatever label is going to be handling it rather than,
yeah, you want a distribution
let
deal.
Them own me. Yeah, I just want to,
between distribution and artist development,
yeah,
that's kind of where it's at.
And artist development, now how is that as an industry coming along? I mean,
I don't know.
Seems like there's a big hole there that you know, it's just like anything else in the recording industry though. I mean, there's going to be all your con men, and then there's going to be the ones that are really good at it.
Oh, it's in every business. There's con men everywhere.
I just saw today on Cracked.com. There had a thing. It was there's an article about. I'm going to have to look it up. One of the things I put on, you know, there's like any top 40 hit over the last decade and a half were all written by two guys. You know, like that Swedish guy that.
Oh yeah.
Writes for all the pop stars. You know,
I can't think
why
of his name.
They all sound the same. I mean.
That's the sad thing about it.
That's kind of what the music industry is coming to. So, you know, if that's the deal you want.
Yeah. Yeah, we love your stuff. We just don't, want you to write your own material.
Right.
We'd rather have somebody else do it for you.
That's the second time I've referenced Cracked.com.
They should pay us.
No, well, you know, I put that thing out there about that artist that, they wanted to write by committee. It's just interesting. But because of the internet now, people can put those stories out there. And like you said, you, as an artist, you've got to ask yourself, do I want to get in bed with somebody and give them half my publishing? Because I think that's pretty much standard.
I think so. And then you don't have your masters beyond
that. Right. And I mean, why do that when you can go and I mean, I know it's tough to scrape money together, but you could save money getting a studio or find a way to record it, you know, raise money to record it yourself.
Sure.
And outright own the damn thing and look for somebody to distribute it for you. Because I tell you what, it's going to be easier to get a label to back you on the next time out or somebody to get you distribution if they see you're a go-getter. You're already out there getting it done by yourself.
You become aware of the investment
exactly.
at that point.
Then they'll see some return on that, and they're willing to front a little money. That's the only way you're going to get that money now.
Oh, sure. You know, you look at bands like Lucero.
Yes.
Okay, that's a prime example. They're signed to a very, very small...
Mad Jack Records.
Yeah. Just a little deal there. And
there was a time when I don't even know how many bands are on their label now, but I remember when they started, it was Lucero, and it was the Pawtuckets.
Yeah.
And there's one other band. Was it Big Ass Truck?
I think it may have been Big Ass Truck. Well, Big Ass Truck, ultimately, of course, it fell apart in some way, and some of those guys went over into Lucero.
Right.
Yeah, at least one of them did.
But yeah, that was like the independent label at the time. They had three artists, and those all three. I mean, the guys. I think that label did fairly well for a local independent label.
Yeah, they did. When John Stubblefield came over to the studio, he brought me the collection of Lucero records.
Right,
and this was early on when Radio Memphis got started. And I said, I'm going to have to ask you this stupid question. I said, is it all right if we play any of this stuff? Or, you know, he goes, oh, shit, no, play it. You know, that's what it's for. That's why I'm bringing it over here.
That's awesome.
And so apparently Mad Jack doesn't really care either about performance royalty or anything like that. They're just willing
to look at Lucero. I mean, they've managed to claw their way up through the indie scene of the 90s.
Oh, yeah, and still at it.
And still at it and doing quite well. But, you know, I mean, yeah, you know, I guess the hipsters are onto them, and you'll see them pop up in Rolling Stone magazine every now and then. But that's...
Yeah, but they're not. It's not like they're getting... traditional radio play.
Yeah, radio
either.
Play. Well, that's what's really died out in the industry is radio play. What the hell happened to that?
Oh well, that's all limited.
It's like only the labels dictate radio play. That's all. It's all so corporate. It's the corporate networks and the corporate corporations that own the radios and the corporations that own labels. It's just gotten. It. You know, I mean, I hate to say it, but it feels like it's that old guard that just doesn't want to let go and let the world change around them.
That's exactly right. You know, that's how the death of FM radio happened, too.
Yeah.
You know, because these guys knew it. They knew long before everybody else did, these corporate guys. They knew that the industry was going to change so much, but they were going to rape that corpse for everything they could get out of it and leave it on the side of the road and cash their, you know, their five-year plans in and leave.
Well, you know, the writing's been on the wall with the internet for, God, two and a half decades now.
Yeah.
I mean, just it's just like that old guard doesn't want to figure out how to embrace it and use it. It's what happened with Napster, you know.
I told you the story about sitting in the meeting with a advertising agency here locally. And I was sitting...
I believe so, yeah.
I was sitting at the table in there and I was giving the pitch, if you will, about Radio Memphis to this guy. I said, look, we're looking for advertisers. You know?
Right.
You guys have some, and you've got some that fit our demo, and we thought maybe we would, you know, explain to you what Radio Memphis is about and what internet radio is. And this gentleman sat there and looked at me and began to sweat a little bit.
And he's a media buyer now.
He's a media buyer.
Yeah.
He understands.
Well, no, he doesn't.
Well, he understands the concepts that I'm looking at.
Right, right.
He just didn't understand the platform by which I was explaining him.
Well, you know, I mean, gosh, I had a professor in college used to say, when it comes to technology, God tells Memphis last.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, even the advertising industry locally, they're probably more technologically advanced than even some of their clients around this town. You know, I mean, if there's any group of people in Memphis that's plugged into what's going on,
it's the
rest of the world,
right?
It's the agencies, because this is...
Except this unfortunate fellow that I met.
Well, but that's the thing, is even the top of the top in this city... They're just not prepared to get internet radio. I mean, it's you know, I mean, how long has it taken for this to catch on just locally?
Yeah, and I'm sitting there with one of the girls from the sales department, and we're pulling up numbers, and we're explaining how many people are hitting this thing, and how many people are listening, and what countries we reach to, and I leaned over to the guy, and I said, you know, the whole thing about General Motors getting out of the FM business, they're not putting them in their cars, and he farted. he farted. He actually, I didn't know if he pooped his pants, but he farted.
He got nervous,
and he had this look on his face that said to me, how dare you kill my beloved FM radio?
Well, you know, again, it might just be not even that, but just being resistant to the change. Like the idea of I mean, this is a hurdle you had to overcome early on with Radio Memphis, is most people listen to radio in your car. How do we get it in the car? Well, we had to build an app.
We built an app,
and even then, I mean, this is, what, 4 years ago now, right? Three years ago. 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So even then, you know, smartphones weren't in every hand like they are now. I mean, that explosion's only happened over the last couple of years.
And even then, over the past, 18 months or less, you've got cars that sync up to you.
Sync up with the phones.
Sync up with the phones.
So, again, you're ahead of the curve, even globally in some ways.
Right. Although Europe,
particularly here in Memphis,
because even in Europe was one of the first outside of the area of the United States that really glommed onto what we were doing.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you know, they're hip to the whole pirate scene.
Well, smartphones and particularly the cell networks to support internet capable phones were already up, stable, and successful long before we even got that here in Asia and Europe.
Oh, yeah.
Now, when it hit here, of course, we still can't apparently achieve the level of stability that they can overseas.
Yeah. I remember my wife coming to me, and she goes, how do you text? This is long time ago. And I said, well, text, and this is before there were alphanumeric keyboards, you know. This was before smartphones, you know. It's doing this on a little Nokia, you know. And I said, what's all this about? And she said, well, my family in Ireland, they text, and it's cheaper to communicate via that method than a phone call, because you're going to pay ridiculous amounts of money for
international call.
So once we kind of figured out what this texting thing was all about, I mean, they'd been doing it over there years before we were a thing. And I thought, you know, texting's not going to catch on here. People like to talk.
Well, you know, it's funny.
This is pre-Facebook, too. Early on
in my web development career, I worked for a gentleman, and I won't name his name. He's a hell of a guy. But at the time, this is 2001, and he was an old guard ad guy, and he was like, I just don't understand. You know, I don't think email is relevant to doing business. And at the time, not everybody in the professional world had email.
Right.
And I used to make fun of that because, you know, I was a web developer. I saw the world changing, this old guy, you know, whatever. But then when texting came along, my knee-jerk reactions, I'm never going to need that.
Right.
And, I mean, at the time, I was in my early 30s and single, and where texting got me was dating, because women, single women, love to text. Like texting.
Oh,
texting,
my God.
Texting wouldn't exist if it weren't for the female of the species, because I think men, and I'm not trying to, you know.
No, you're right.
Here's what's different about men and women, but texting, if it had been up to men to like propagate that and make it a thing,
it wouldn't have happened. No. No, we'd still be sending smoke signals.
Right. But as soon as wives realized they could text you to stop a store and get milk as opposed to have to...
Or, where are you?
Yeah, yeah. Or just, you know, texting with their friends. The women love the text. And I was so resistant to it. And then, of course, my daughter, she's 21 now.
Right.
She got to that age where she had to have a phone. And that's it. I don't think she talks to anybody on that phone but me.
Because she texts everybody else. Yeah. Well, and going back to a little bit of, you know, the talk about email, there's always been talk here of late that email is a dying thing.
It's certainly not a secure thing anymore.
It never was. Well, not that anything is. But, you know, we get music submitted to us via Facebook.
Yeah.
The private message thing, you know.
Oh, yeah. They can just link to a file or something.
You can send an MP3 via Facebook now. I don't particularly like doing that. I'm not necessarily into, you know, Facebook that often. In fact, I don't really care for it, to be honest with you.
You know, again, I think maybe it's a generation thing, and I missed it a little bit. I mean, I don't know. I just...
I use it for business, but...
Well, that's the thing. You know,
I'll write something tacky up there.
Well, here you are. You're an on-air personality and well-known radio station pirate.
Let's not push it.
Well, all right, but for you, for business, part of it is you have to build a persona and put it out there for people to be able to engage with you.
It's an accessibility.
The Twitterverse is actually, I think, much better equipped to handle that public persona.
That's why I like Twitter so much.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Facebook without the Facebook, you know.
But for me, this is probably why I'll never be famous, because I hate doing that shit.
You don't have to. There are several people who have gotten away from using social media. People that are in the limelight, they just choose not to deal with it.
Well, yeah, but even that, I think, is a dying breed. I mean, again, it goes back to like we're talking about independent bands. The world has changed. If you don't promote yourself as an artist of any kind, it's no movie studio or record label or talent agency that's going to do it for you.
And I felt like such a Luddite getting this damn podcast started.
Yeah, you kind of dragged your feet on it.
I did. And then when I launched it, I got chastised for, now you're doing it.
Who chastised you?
No names.
Okay.
But they're fans, and they listen to it, and they enjoy it so far. And, well, we'll see how it goes. And who is it? Chris Nichols said that he was just addicted to the stories. And
Brother Doug's a hell of a storyteller. I listened to that last episode.
And, obviously this is being, by the time this one gets released, there'll be probably two or three other episodes up, so it'll be a total of four. So, because I record these at different times. But here's the thing, too. My wife and I had a long, because she's now starting to understand how this works. And I was talking to her, and I was talking to my agent about this. And, and I got him hooked on what I was doing. And he really enjoyed the whole sound of it and the direction this was going in. And he had been bugging me for a long time to write a book. And I don't know. A book is a book. And there's a lot of labor that goes into it.
Yeah, you're right.
A lot for very little return.
Not only do you have to write out those stories, you have to go back and review it. Live with it for a very, very long time.
Yeah, and a lot of the things that I went through in the business are pretty dark.
Right.
I went through some pretty dark stuff. So she said, she asked me, Joe did, she said, are you at any point going to address the bad dog situation?
Oh, yes.
And I said, yeah, I'm going to have to at some point. People still ask me about it.
I remember when you told me about it.
Yeah. And it'll probably happen because that's going to have to take me personally to a very dark spot, that dark place.
I understand. I just
in a way sort of reliving it, but it's not pretty,
I wonder if we've got listeners to our youngling podcast that actually know who Bad Dog, don't know who Bad Dog is. I would assume most of our local listeners do, but
they would.
That's a story right there. I mean,
I'll explain it at the point that I'll do it.
And legend, man.
No, it was an absolute legend, and I had the honor of working with him for a few years. But I'm going to have to sit down over copious amounts of liquor.
So you won't really be doing the podcast alone. George Dickel will George be filling Dickel in will the parts filling. You can't.
Exactly. I know. It's. I'm just going to have to, really prepare myself, in a psychological way to go through this.
You're going to have to explore some dark territory.
And it'll be very cathartic. And there's going to be this whole thing of, and I had to run this through my attorney. I said, I want to name names.
You might not be able to do that.
And
you might just have to say this asshole here. And
I was given the green light to name names.
Oh, really?
Yes, I was given the green light, but I can't. I can name names all I want to. If I want to talk about this person or that person, there's no problem with that. It's just that I can't say that this person did that thing without absolutely having absolute proof of this.
I see. Okay. Yeah.
Now I can state
that they were there.
That they were contributing factors to something occurring.
Right.
They'll probably have to, I'll have to put my own disclaimer at the front of it by saying, these are my opinions only.
The following opinion is that of Rick Cheddar's and not that of Radio Memphis, even though they are one and the same.
Well, or that, I'm not implicating anybody in the commission of certain crimes that kind of thing. Although when I look back at that, I think what happened was criminal, and
we can't tease this too much longer. Actually,
I know, but
yeah, people are gonna be screaming. Well, just tell the damn story.
I'm not gonna tell it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know that's when you need to get off your chest on your own.
And there won't be anybody around when I do it. That'll have to be laid down in a dark candlelit, incense burning, and whiskey soaked. And it's just gonna have to come out in the way that it will, and then we'll see.
Well, I think I look forward to hearing it. You filled me in on some of it, but
I mean, here's, without getting into all of that, I can tell you the environment that I worked in for a while.
Yes, yeah, so let's talk about corporate radio in the modern era.
You'll like this about how clueless individuals can be. There's a thing called the Peter Principle. Are you familiar with the Peter Principle?
I don't think I am.
It related to economics, but it mostly related to business theory.
I'm definitely not familiar with it.
And I wasn't hip to it until Bad Dog explained it to me. And then once I was made aware of it, I understood exactly what the Peter Principle is. Now, the Peter Principle was developed by a guy whose last name was Peter.
Okay.
And he theorized, or he's the one that postulated this principle, that a human being will rise to the level of his own incompetence.
And yeah, that makes sense.
And thus be promoted as such.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we had at Clear Channel, at the days I was there, we had a sales manager named Tim Davies, right? Timothy P. Davies.
Right.
And Tim worked, he was in our sales department for a while and ultimately became the general sales manager and was very good at it.
Yeah.
Although there was probably some people that worked under him that didn't agree with what I just said, but nevertheless, he was good at what he did. Now, he was working under the general manager of the Clear Channel cluster at the time by the name of Bruce Demps, who was also a very nice guy, and he was savvy, and he understood the business. And
right.
He was always very kind to me, so I really don't have anything bad to say, because whatever decisions he made didn't necessarily affect me. So, anyway, long story short, Bruce moves out.
Out of Memphis or just to
Yeah, he left Memphis.
Okay.
Yeah, he got out of Clear Channel and left the whole thing.
More power to him.
Right. Meanwhile, Tim Davies, who is he's actually the number two guy. He's the general sales manager, right? So he throws his hat in to become the general manager.
Okay.
He gets the job, and then this level of incompetence showed up that nobody understood.
Right.
Okay. There was horrible decisions that were made that came from his office.
Yeah. Well, that's what, you know, that's what happens in that kind of culture. Like you said, incompetence rises to its level. Is that
you rise to your own level.
I mean, a water finds its own level. Yes. Rise to the level of
your own incompetence. Yeah. In other words, let's say you're a sergeant in the military and you do a damn fine job of it and they promote you to like a general. And
be a hell of a promotion.
It would be a hell of a promotion. But you can't be a general because you don't know how. You're not very good at it, but you're a damn good sergeant. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
That's the Peter Principle in a nutshell. And this, Tim Davies got into this spot, and the depth of his cluelessness was brought forward by a comment that Bad Dog once said to me, that he was in a meeting with him one time, and he was laying out whatever the topic or the subject of the meeting was. And he said, I looked into Tim's eyes, and he said it was as if I was staring into the eyes of a chicken.
Just nothing there.
He was completely at a loss.
Yeah.
Just didn't get it. He was out of the loop. To give you an idea how bad this was, now this is the funny part of the whole thing. Well, when we had just moved to the building that they're in now at on Thousand Oaks in the big, it used to be FedEx's office deal at American Way and 240.
Why did they move out of the Beale Street office?
I don't know. Ask Tim Davies. It was something about putting everybody together, and they thought that paying $40,000 a month in rent was a lot better than paying, I don't know.
I'm sure. Yeah, it was prime real estate.
Oh, sure. So, at any rate, we get there, right? And we had at that time we had seven stations in the building. Now, legally, we could only have six, but we had seven.
They have a limit on as to how many radio stations you can have.
Yeah, the FCC doesn't want one company to have too much more of a percentage of the market than another competitor, because then that would be
so where were they when Clear Channel was growing their empire?
Well, that was the whole point. Now, a lot of that came from all those laws came from that. So what ultimately happened was that this particular station became, they didn't technically own it, they oversaw its operation. It was owned by another company,
right?
Okay. And what Clear Channel was allowed to do was to put advertisement on it. They could put whatever programming they wanted on it. They bought the airtime from the legal owners of that station, and we housed it. And there was, however,
like a shell game,
kind of. So there was this program, and there was a deal that, you know, if you wanted to go get on the air, all you had to do was write Clear Channel a check, and they would give you a show. You know, you paid $100 an hour. KWAM does that now.
Huh.
990 AM.
That's interesting.
You pay them $100 an hour. You can do whatever you want to for those, you know, for the time that you're on. You can go out and sell your own ads, get your money back. Whatever you want.
Okay, so that's like you put an infomercial on that spot.
Pretty much, whatever you want to do. Yeah. You're buying the time, you can fill it however you want to. So they were doing that on a Saturday night, and they had these guys in. There were these Mexicans that had come in, and they were running Mexican Tejano dance music. You know, ranchero music, right. and they were attracting a whole different demographic that other stations were neglecting.
It's a large demographic here in Memphis.
Absolutely. So They were on late Saturday nights, and at the time I was still doing a little bit of Saturday night work up there at the at the, at the place, and I would often see the DJ there, and he brought in a laptop that had all of his music on it, right. And plugged into the system, and away he went.
And you were just like, you. I remember when I had to carry boxes of LPs.
Yeah, right. You little bastard, you know. And he was always nice to me, but he always had this kind of a shifty thing going on. I didn't care, you know. And so I'm where I had to leave, I would go through the break room, and I'd walk there. The station, the studio, was right next to the break room, and I would often see these folks hanging around. And it was all in Spanish, right? And I never really paid. I understand a good chunk of the language, but I didn't really bother to. You know,
you're not fluent. You're,
I didn't want to source.
Just sit
that
there, and be like, "Can you talk slower so I can get?"
I can understand. You know, I can understand quite a bit of it, but I didn't. You know, really pay much attention. I was tired. I was on my way out, and I walked through the break room. There's a bunch of girls in there and a bunch of party people, and that tends to happen on a Saturday night. You know, people come up and they want to hang out at the radio station and stuff like that. So, anyway, I leave, and that's the end of that. And then I hear the following Monday.
I need to get on Saturday nights.
that's where it's at, man. I hear when I go back to work on Monday that there was this quite the hubbub that occurred around the station. Well, apparently, apparently what happened was I had left, and we must have passed each other literally in the elevator. One elevator was going up and I was going down. It was Tim Davies. He was headed up to his office to go get something, and he went in there and he saw these people, and he stopped by the break room to get him a soda. And there was this girl, this Mexican girl, and she's there, and her English is brutal, and she kind of hits on him a little bit, and he didn't think anything of it, and he gets his soda, and he's like, I gotta go, and he gets in the elevator and he leaves. Now he's on his way down, and on the ground floor, we're up on the fourth floor, on the ground floor is a workout facility that was open to the employees of the building,
right?
And in there is a bathroom, and he decides, well, I gotta go to the bathroom before I go.
Get back in the car.
Get back in the car. Yeah. He goes into the gym, and there is a flat out orgy happening in there.
Oh God!
There are guys getting blown left and right.
It's like a European porn movie.
Oh, exactly.
Right,
there's a chick bent over the treadmill. There's just things happening, and it's all happening in Spanish, and they're listening to the guy upstairs.
So this was his compañeros that he brought along with him while he was spinning up at the radio station?
He did not have the foresight to have somebody translate what the guy was saying on the air.
Yeah.
And what this guy was doing is he was running a little dance show on the radio, right?
Right, right.
You know, for people to listen to and dance and have some fun. But at the same time, he was inviting people to come to the station. He would say this on the air. Tell the security guard you're coming to collect some tickets that we're giving away now. He was running whores out of the break room.
Oh, my God.
And these guys would come up, and they would knock on the door, and somebody would let them in, and they would exchange cash, and they would go downstairs and turn the trick down there in the gym. In the gym. This had been going on for months.
I didn't think people actually had sex in gyms. That was just something in movies.
And there's a shower down there and all of this business. So it actually was sort of a win-win for everybody.
So that's what he was doing with the time he was paying for, is right. He was running his escort service.
He was running whores. Yeah, he was running whores out of
there. Man, did they call the police? Did this guy get arrested?
No, he didn't know what to do. I think Tim was a bit taken aback by all of this. And ultimately, it was, you know, it's like, look, this isn't working out.
Yeah.
You're not paying me enough for this. You know, we're going to have to boost the whole thing. And that was that. And that was the whole thing. And it kind of gives you an idea of this is the guy that would sit there in meetings and say, he'd use the phrase moving forward a lot. You know, corporate speak.
Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Traction on that project. Let me just reach out to somebody.
Right. Let's touch base on this. We're going to have a little confab.
Put a little pin in that.
Yeah, put a little pin in that. God. Moving forward, you know. Oh, God, shut up.
I worked, kind of back to your point about rising to the level of your own incompetence. I worked at a company back in 2000. We developed distance learning software. There's actually a lot of science and research and really smart dudes that worked on this, and it was the idea of using the internet technology to actually be able to do like career pathing where people could, whereas a corporation, a smart corporation, would invest in grooming people are setting out a path for them so that when that guy leaves, there's already somebody who's prepped to take the
position. Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. Nobody does it.
Of course not.
I mean, I know a guy that's a doctorate. He's got a doctorate in that. He used to do...
it's called distance learning.
Well, what I'm talking about is succession planning, but we were doing distance learning, which was just a way to do training over the internet where companies could lay out, like you go to your corporate review and they'd say, all right, if you want to be a sales manager in a couple of years, go online and take these courses and then do this, and this. And
we'll I got you.
They just do career pathing, but they would use software we developed to do it.
Yeah, Clear Channel had that. It's called Clear Channel University. And it was a joke.
Well, yeah, I would like to say what we did was a joke. It wasn't a joke till somebody bought it and picked it apart and sold it off, because so that's what corporations do.
Yeah.
Now I've completely forgotten what I was going with. Oh, so this is back in 2000. I've completely lost the train of thought. Can we take this out in post?
We probably can.
No, I'm kidding.
No, it's not going to be edited. Or something will come.
It'll come back to me.
We were talking about rising to the level of your own incompetence, which is sort of along the lines of doing this.
The corporate speak. That's where I was
going. Corporate speak.
Okay, yes. Yeah. So when we worked there.
There was a test on corporate speak.
All of our clients were, I'm not going to name any names because, I still work for some of these clients.
Sure.
But the larger corporations that kind of, run about the city and, we'd go in these meetings with these cats and our sales staff would really start to adapt like their culture. Corporate culture infects whoever touches it. Mm-hmm. And so we had one of our developers in his, we all had whiteboards in our offices.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a calendar hanging over his whiteboard, but underneath that we'd go in there every time we heard a new corporate buzzword, we had a list, kept a running list
underneath there
so you could see, like,
that's hilarious. So it was like bingo.
Oh my god, it got to the point where we filled up his entire whiteboard with phrases you would hear on a daily basis.
We knew there was going to be staff meetings, we would always have an over under on how many times he would use the phrase moving forward.
Thinking outside the box. Oh my god.
That's
and the thing
one.
Is it's still a cliche and yet people still do it.
I've been accused of saying it, because sometimes there's no other way to get around it. It gets ingrained into you and it becomes habit. But
I try to say pushing the envelope, just because
push the envelope is a good one.
Just because I don't want to be the thinking outside the box guy.
Right? Yeah. So the guy that worked at Taco Bell that came up with thinking outside the bun was one of these corporate schlubs.
Yeah, but that was a decent campaign. That was a decent slogan. I thought
it was. I'm very picky. Being in this business, I'm pretty picky about advertising.
Yeah.
I'm not that good of a spot writer, but I know what works and I know what doesn't work.
You're good at the one-liners like that. Taglines
are coming up with the quick little audio logo, if you will.
Right.
I like to pride myself on that, and I'll spend time really thinking about it. There are those things you're sitting there and you're watching TV, you're trying to kind of empty your head, trying to get through the writer's block, and you go, "Ooh, I got it!" And we used to do that all the time. We'd make these jokes about all the goofy shit that Clear Channel was doing at the time. It's like there was a guy who the pressure was on his ass up, but way up in the corporate level, that he had to come up with this thing that he was going to do, and it'd be something ridiculously stupid.
Oh yeah,
they had to say. Instead of brought to you by this particular element, brought to you by Budweiser or whatever, powered by.
Oh.
Serious? They wanted to change everything. And it was powered by, this traffic report, powered by.
Oh, wait, this had to be like some kind of reaction to the internet culture.
Yeah, and then there was this whole thing about, we've got to push, we got to constantly mention the internet. We got to constantly mention our website and this, that, and the other. And I'll never forget Brother Doug in a meeting one time goes, "Man, y'all are missing out." Because Doug ain't afraid of nobody.
Right.
And in fact, it was during when
I first met Doug, he told me that if you're not pissing somebody off in this business, you're not doing your job.
That's correct. And I fail at that sometimes. But but I'm feeling better all the time now. He stood up in a meeting and he said, "All of you are missing out." And there was like some guys from corporate that were in this meeting. And he says, he goes, "Y'all are all fucked up. Y'all are missing the boat. The app is where it's going to be."
Right.
And he said, "You can't put all your radio stations on one app," which is what iHeartRadio is. And that's what Clear Channel ultimately
said. But they only have so much programming to choose from anyway.
Exactly. And it's what happened ultimately was all the radio stations lost their identities just like that.
Huh.
You know, now it was, well, what do you listen to on iHeartRadio? Well, I don't know.
Yeah, it's I've looked at iHeartRadio. I had it on my phone. I just couldn't when it first came out. It was a big deal. I just couldn't stomach it, man. It was like, you know,
And what's really bizarre is if you go, like, if you listen to, say, the classic rocker here in Memphis, and then you flip over just for shits and giggles, the classic rocker in Omaha.
Anywhere else, it's the same.
Same song playing at that same time, because that's the way they all work.
And at this point, they'd flushed all the jocks, all the local talent that, you know, you wanted to hear anyway. I mean, right?
Exactly. They gave the heavyweights their own shows, you know.
Right.
Like, and a lot of them just said "F it," and they went over to satellite.
Mm-hmm.
But part of it too, you know, and this is my theory on this, and I think it's still valid as far as companies like Clear Channel or Cumulus or Intercom or the big boys. What they're going to do is they're going to homogenize everything,
right?
So if you, let's say you own, I don't know, 500 classic rock stations, right, across the country, you're going to have everybody play the same song. At the same time, right?
Yeah.
So you only have to program one thing, and it just yaks it out to all these stations. Then you're going to have a set of jocks, right? You have your morning, midday, afternoon drive, and night guy. You have those four guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to do the same thing for all these stations.
Yeah.
And you're going to have a copy of that for every format you've got. So whether it's rock, country, classic rock.
Well, don't they usually like celebrities got the same morning show because it's syndicated anyway?
In theory, and then they take all the localness out of it.
Yeah, and that's to me, that's the death of radio right there.
Oh, it is.
I mean, that's when I quit listening. It's you know,
I'm going to say this, and I don't care if I get in trouble or not. Wendy Hayes,
yeah,
traffic reporter here locally.
Mm-hmm.
You hear her on various stations around town. You know, she didn't live.
I haven't listened to
her. Yeah, she doesn't live in Memphis.
Not at all.
No, she lives in Atlanta.
Gosh,
she's doing traffic reports, live traffic reports from Atlanta, Georgia.
Whatever happened to the local company here that had Deputy Joey Hadley and the whoever they sent in the traffic girl?
They got bought out.
Picked apart and sold off, right?
Exactly.
That's how it works, folks.
Yeah, it was the Total Traffic Network, I think, was what that company was called. And then before that, it was airborne traffic, which they supposedly were flying around.
Well, that's kind of like, you know, Radio Memphis, we've got kind of like the less this one up here from the sky.
Yeah, exactly. And, which is sad because I've actually spent time in a helicopter doing traffic reports in Texas, but that's a whole other animal. But there was these different companies that came up with these ideas, and then Westwood One got involved in it and bought a lot of this and then sold it to, you know, the big monster in a box corporate radio.
Yeah.
And then they said, fuck it, we're going to put it all inside, we're going to fire all these people, and then we're going to...
They just ruined it.
They would say, well, just, we're going to wheel out the reports. So for the right after I left Clear Channel, they completely gutted the traffic department locally, and then they were having people out of Nashville do the traffic from Memphis. And they weren't paying these people anymore.
They're just paying for a service at that point.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
But it was internal. They owned the service. You know?
You know, I just canceled my satellite radio finally. I've had it since I bought the Jeep. It came with it for a year.
Yeah.
I know we've talked about satellite a little bit. The only reason I held on to it as long as I did was for one station.
Yeah. Oh, that's kind of sad.
It is. But it was.
How much a month is that?
Oh, God. Like $12.99 a month. I shouldn't have been paying that.
So $13 a month.
$13. $6 more than that if you want like the internet service, which. Let me get back to that.
Okay.
The only reason I kept that was because of the Blue Station, and then even that, you know, when
Bill Wax
bailed, it's just not the same,
right?
But also, I blew a fuse and I stereo didn't work anymore anyway, so I canceled the service.
So there's no point in having it.
But you know, but I've been in that situation before with Sirius where I was, you know, like I can't be paying this. I'd lost my job, whatever.
Right.
And they do the thing where we'll give you free radio, or we'll give you free service for 6 months. You know, we'll work it out. You don't have to go buy.
Just don't leave me.
They were desperate to keep. You know, and I
it's a numbers game.
Yeah. I imagine they're still desperate, and they did try to throw the free radio at me, and I had to be firm this time. But you know, I got to thinking.
Yeah.
Satellite wasn't a bad idea when they did it. They should have. It should have. If they'd just gone right to the internet, God, who knows? You know.
Oh, they'd have been leaps and bounds of Pandora and everybody else.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, yeah. Who knew the internet was going to I mean, who knew what it was going to be? It's still the Wild West.
Right, it
is. But it occurred to me, though, like, they're charging, like, we're talking about like having the app on your phone to listen to Radio Memphis, or having the app. Now you can get an app from them to play their satellite service over your phone, but you pay extra for that, you know, it was played over your computer or whatever.
Right.
So, but why would I pay them for the internet service and the satellite service?
Yeah. Good point.
And I never did that because it never made sense. But I don't understand why they don't just flip it. Like, if they took all the internet, if they partnered up and brought internet radio stations to their satellites and beamed them down.
If they came to me with an offer,
yeah,
I'd entertain it.
Why? I don't understand. Because if they're so desperate to survive, there's a whole gold mine out there for them to, instead of them having to own it or front it or foot the bill for it. Or
yes and no. Here's the part of the problem as I see it, and I've heard several people voice this, is, and this is an issue that is kind of built into the whole satellite problem,
right,
is that there is so much room for content that they have literally too much of it
now. Yeah.
And they've put all of their eggs in all these different baskets, and that's why they run it. What was it? I wanted to say, was it $12 billion a year deficit that they run at?
Yeah, they set up to take a loss for them, but here's part of the problem. It's interface. They're still clinging to the old satellite radios. Like, look, man, put a touchscreen on that mother, make it run with a bunch of apps on it, like my Apple TV or your iPhone, and let me get whatever radio station I want to feed through it.
Yeah.
Instead of overwhelming me with a dial, like a digital dial that's got 500 stations, and I've got to get their guide out to find out what BLUS stands for. I think that's blues, but, but you know, because they always like abbreviate it. I'm just saying, if they improve the interface and offer people whatever the hell they wanted, that service would be worth it to me. If they were picking up every internet radio station out there that worked out a deal with them. Hell, they could bring advertisers to it. Of course, I know they're advertising free. That's the other part of the problem, isn't it?
Part of it. Yeah. But that's... They're not entirely.
But, you know, maybe they should
move. I think, doesn't Howard Stern run ads?
Maybe they should run to the advertising model. They quit losing money.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Instead of charging people $13 a month.
It's the same thing that what the newspaper industry is dealing with.
Yeah.
You know, why am I going to pay... however it is... Was it $13 a month to have the newspaper delivered? But if I go to the local paper's website... They have a paywall.
Yeah,
I don't pay for my news. There's so many ways for me to get it for nothing.
Yeah, you know, the Commercial Appeal did that thing now where some articles are,
and then they would link. If you followed them on Twitter, they would link to paid
that you can't go see anyway. I think there's strategy.
I wrote a snarky tweet to whoever wrote that. I said, "Way to link it to a paid site, you boob."
You know, God, I don't want to name any names. I know a guy that worked there in their web department since like 2000, and he's the one that he really spearheaded keeping them relevant when a lot of other newspapers were
dying off.
I mean, big newspapers, and one of the reasons he was able to keep them successful is he kept pushing back on them whenever they wanted to charge for the web service.
Yeah. Well, now that
we do online ad sales. That's where you make the money for putting the news up there that's where you're going to get.
I'm fine with that.
And, you know, he took another job through Scripps Howard and left Memphis, what, 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah.
And then, like, almost immediately the paywall went up. And the way they had it was really shit. Like, you viewed 10 articles for free, and now you can't view anymore, but you could read the article right underneath the box that was blocking it up.
There was another way around that, and I think they've since fixed it. But
They've gotten tighter on it. That's the thing. They've gotten tighter instead of...
Looser. And, you know, what we used to do is we'd pull up a story, and then you'd have, like, 4 or 5 seconds before the thing popped up,
right?
Click the print icon.
Oh, yeah.
And
the
printer version comes up and it shuts down the other window.
See, they didn't even put it together right, which is...
They were so desperate to get people to subscribe to it that was the limits that they were going to do. And you're right. Satellite radio, you know, if they open up the doors and allowed advertisement, you know, look at Pandora. Pandora you can get for free if you don't mind stomaching some ads. Or you could pay them $30 a month.
Yeah,
for an ad-free version, you know. Oh, eat me.
But same thing. You know what? Give me an app I can play on my car or on my phone with satellite service. Here's the satellite piggybacking off of their backbone that they've got. Give it to me for free.
Right.
And advertise to me. I don't mind that. I mean, look, it's like podcasts, you know. Doing an ad front and back, that's not a bad way to go. Doing a single ad. I mean, look, you don't have to bombard everybody with advertising. But the other thing is, with an app... You've got visual advertising as well as spots.
Sure.
So you can actually cut it down a little bit. It doesn't have to overwhelm the listener, I don't think.
Yeah, and the thing with this particular podcast, if somebody came to me and said, hey, I want to buy some time on it,
yeah,
I'd be like, hell yeah.
Absolutely. In fact, if you're out there listening, you want to get your name heard.
I'm a whore, bitch.
Yes.
You know.
We are actively looking for sponsors for this
podcast.
I'm not
to the level of Mexican DJ whore, I'm working on that. You know?
By the way, I will bring my friend Carlos in here next week, and we'll talk about how to get him to promote, and we'll do some spots for them.
Oh, my God. You look at another thing Satellite did, too, was they paid in a stupid amount of money for Howard Stern.
Yeah, they did. But see, that's why they've got to find a way to survive, because they're probably still writing those checks.
And they will be for a while. Yeah. And I think they just renewed him not long ago.
And it's another case of like them.
And Oprah, she's up there.
Embracing that business model, not wanting to evolve it. All they gotta do is evolve it. Like, it wasn't a bad idea when they started it.
No.
But the internet kind of came along and grew faster than they did. Now they got to find a way to
play catch up. And I don't see that happening.
Well,
and
Stern's the only thing keeping them going. And how long do you think it's going to be before he pulls a Johnny Carson and says, man, I'd rather be playing golf?
He's, what, near 60 now?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like...
At some point he's going to say, man, I don't have to get up and do this shit anymore.
I'm done, and yeah, it's time to go home. And, you know, it's everything. Oh, he gets to talk dirty. And now that he was doing
it...
He's
done it so long, he's probably so sick of it.
Yeah, and it took all the sting out of it. And, you know, I know there's people that really love him, and I respect him. I really do. Yeah. I have a lot of respect for what Howard did and throughout his career.
Well, I think we've talked about it. I mean, yeah, I think when he got on Satellite and was allowed to just say whatever the fuck he wanted to say,
right,
it pulled the teeth out of that show, because they were more creative, I think, when they were dancing, whether they were dancing around it,
right,
or flying in the face of it anyway.
Sure.
And yeah, once you took the binders off, man,
and XM
just kind of lost its.
Well, before there was one, there was XM and Sirius.
XM and Sirius, and neither of them could survive alone, so they had to merge together.
They're all going down together.
Well, you know, that was the. You know, they tried to. I know initially that was going to be blocked because they didn't want to have a monopoly on Satellite Radio.
Right.
Yeah, not the FCC. The FTC wasn't going to allow it. But they made successfully the case that they were competing with internet radio and terrestrial radio. Not,
whatever.
You know, that was their competition.
I remember when I was a production director, I used to have to dub in commercials for XM radio.
Did you?
Yeah.
Because that's right, they bought advertising on all the terrestrial stations.
They bought advertising on the terrestrial stations, and I went to the GM at the time, and I said, excuse me for asking a really dumb question here, but isn't this sort of a conflict of interest?
Right, it's like when you see the Comcast ad on your AT&T Universe.
Which I do see, but yeah. the thing is...
They have to, right? It's a fair trade deal?
It is sort of a fair trade deal, and you can refuse... the business.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no problem with that. You're absolutely allowed to refuse business. Nobody says that you have to,
right,
except, you know.
But they were throwing money around like it was nothing.
Well, it turned out Clear Channel owned part of XM.
Oh, there you go. So they win either way.
And then they got rid of it, and then all of a sudden the spots disappeared. So they realized that, oh, the competition's coming. You know.
So you did spots. Here's what I never understood about the whole, because like terrestrial radio's response to Satellite was this HD station.
HD radio. Yeah, I know all about it.
And I never understood how the hell. I know you did, because Clear Channel had them. It was like the stations but the frequencies in between the frequencies. How the hell did
that's how
work?
They marketed it. All right, you couldn't have HD radio until
I never. Like, I don't understand this shit technically that much anyway, but I've. That I didn't understand at all.
I can dumb it down.
Please explain that.
All right. I worked at 102.7 FM.
Right.
All stations, right, if they have a point behind it, it's an odd number.
Right. They're always odd.
Yeah. Okay. That's the FCC designation. I mean, that gives them separation between other stations, right? So, whatever the time
was. So they don't step on each other's frequencies.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And it keeps some distance, right? So, the... I don't remember the year of it was, but there was this whole mandate about moving everybody over to the digital signal as opposed to an analog signal.
Right. Well, that was happening with TV.
Yeah. And it was all happening at TV at the same time. So radio was, I think that radio was sort of the testing ground for television to see how well it worked.
Well, you know, yeah, because, well.
Because here's the thing.
It had been around for decades.
Right.
HD had been around for decades, but they didn't think anybody would buy new TVs. That was why they sat on it.
Well, this is therein lies the problem with radio, yeah. Digital or HD radio. In an analog situation, you'd be driving along, and when you get to the limits of the signal, it would start to fade out.
Right.
Okay. In digital,
it's gone.
You hear it perfectly clear, and then make one step to the west, and it's gone. All right. Now, what's happening is that the station is broadcasting. We'll use 102.7. They're sending out a signal at 102.7. All right. Now, on an analog turn dial thing, you could pick it up at 102.6
right.
And 102.8.
You got a little wiggle room.
A little wiggle room there. Digital, not so much. Now, because of that, if I've got a digital receiver, then I turn it to 102.7. That's all I'm going to get.
Because it's just focused like a laser beam on
it's,
that.
It's like a laser beam. Now, the FCC has granted me stations on either side, frequencies on either side. So now I can also say, all right, let's go to 102.8, and we'll program that completely different than what's on 102.7.
But how does your analog radio not pick up that signal?
Nope, still, it doesn't.
Still going over the radio wave.
You have to, it's encoded, and you have to have a thing called an HD radio.
Okay, so you've got to have a decoder to actually make it intelligible.
In fact, some markets wound up abandoning a lot of that, and they would do things like, okay, at 102.7, and you had the other sides, they would put on one of those the computer language that decodes onto your screen what the name of the song was.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And what's coming up next, or they would put news on another one, you know, that kind of, you know, the scrolling and the textual stuff.
All right.
But that's it, sort of in a nutshell, without getting too complicated.
No, that makes, all right, but here's... What's the difference between an analog broadcast and a digital broadcast? I mean, shouldn't your transistor radio be able to pick up something, some kind of buzz or something at that?
It probably would.
I mean, there's a signal coming through it. It's right. Just,
but it's encoded in such a way that only a particular receiver will be able to decode what that is.
Okay. So you never hear much about HD radio anymore.
Because
it failed miserably.
You know, Hell Clear Channel dumped millions upon millions of dollars into this. And
what did they do on those other frequencies? Did they just go through rotation on stuff?
They would create whole different radio stations on them.
Hire new personalities?
No, they'd stick different spots in there.
I know. I just accused Clear Channel of hiring personalities.
Exactly. No, they would play only this, that, or the other, and they weren't showing up in the numbers, so they pulled the plug on it. Now, the one place it does work is in television.
Right.
Channel 5. Channel 5.1. 5.2.
Really?
Oh, yeah, they're there. If you have an over-the-air television receiver...
You're getting those extra...
Right now, if you didn't have cable in this city, you'd probably get 12 stations, 15 stations.
Right.
You know, so one of them does nothing but run old movies. Some of them just run Andy Griffith 24 hours a day.
Is that with an HD receiver, though, right?
Yeah, it's HD an HD antenna. Receiver, yeah, because your television is not digital.
Right.
And you have the HD receiver, because we moved everything to digital now.
Well, televisions are digital now.
Yeah, we turned all that off. Turned all the analog stuff off. Now we can laser focus signals into all around the spectrum.
I remember,
and that's going to kill cable. I think it will.
Oh, I think cable. I think appointment viewing, first of all, is just ridiculous at this point. I mean,
yeah.
Why they... bother to put a guide up and have everybody set your DVR when we're clearly moving into an on-demand world as far as your visual entertainment goes.
Once sports catches on, which I think they kind of
sports. Have. Well, sports is going to be the one reason to watch TV live, I think.
Yeah, my wife is a huge sports nut, and she'll watch any major sport. But the thing is, she doesn't watch it live.
So it doesn't matter to her anyway.
She DVRs it.
Right.
But it's not like you can go... to the NFL app and watch the Super Bowl later.
That's true. Yeah, because those broadcast rights cost too much. I mean, that's
right.
The name
and
of the game,
and
right,
they're going to have to figure out replay. You know how all the replay stuff is supposed to work, and you know there's the rights behind that. Now they are doing. I think the Major League Baseball (MLB) is playing around with an idea on their app that you can watch any game occurring at any second, strictly by punching in what you want to watch and paying a fee per game.
That makes sense. That's an interesting model.
It'd be like you're buying a ticket to go to the game. It might be $10, maybe $5 to watch the game.
Well, if they made it reasonable, like 99 cents or $1. Yeah. I mean $1.99 or whatever. No, that's an interesting model. I mean, if you look at what's going on with cable and with Netflix and Amazon doing their own original programming now too. I mean, the days are coming when HBO is going to tell the cable companies, you can either carry us or not, but we're going to offer...
Yeah, you and I have talked about this before. Yeah. What were you saying? That everyone's watching HBO, right?
They're the linchpin. Well, HBO and Netflix... You know, Wired had a great article titled, Netflix is trying to become HBO before HBO becomes Netflix. And at that point, HBO had their Go service.
Yes, yeah.
And Netflix was putting that House of Cards. That was last year.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to do content. HBO's trying to do distribution. I think they're watching each other. The thing is, Netflix is never going to get picked up by Comcast or AT&T or Dish or Direct.
I thought that just happened.
Netflix? No.
I think Netflix just...
Are they going to have a channel on...
I think Comcast and... I think it was Comcast and Roku or Time Warner, whatever. They came to an agreement to allow...
The app.
The video on demand services through Netflix.
Well, that's interesting.
For an additional fee, of course.
So, like, well, that's just like having the app built into your set-top box, so, which... Hey, that's impressive that that's happening.
I'm fairly certain that's what's happening.
But the, you know, I've read that HBO's test marketed just a subscription service to them without going through a cable company in a few test markets. Mm-hmm. But the big holdout has been, you know, the cable companies. I mean, obviously they probably got agreements going into several years into the future. For one, you know, I'm sure they're still locked into something like HBO can just unass it right now.
No, I'm sure it's fairly ironclad. Yeah,
but also. HBO's had this fear that if they start offering that, the cable companies will drop them, which I think with the shows they've got going right now, the hits they've got going on, they're getting that leverage to be able to say, you could drop us if you want.
Right.
We're still going to do this. And if we do this, you're going to lose subscribers. So it's in your best interest to continue to carry us.
Yeah. You remember, was it last year when CBS got dropped by, was it DirecTV?
Yeah. Well, and AMC did it a couple of years, a year before that.
And when you had a major network turn around and say, fuck you.
Yeah.
We're not paying this. We're not doing that.
Right.
And their business never suffered as a result?
Well, here's...
I mean, I'm talking about for CBS.
Yeah. No, it didn't... Well, that same thing happened to AMC.
And a lot of people didn't subscribe to cable after that.
Did you remember the whole deal with AMC? And the AMC ran these clever spots where they'd show, like, zombies walking around downtown New York with crowds that aren't in on the gag.
Yeah.
With these little captions that would say, zombies don't belong in the real world. Tell your director, Dish TV, to start carrying AMC again.
Or, yeah.
And yeah, that was crazy. And I don't think that hurt AMC one bit either.
No.
In fact, if anything, it probably...
It boosted them.
Well, because they started losing subscribers at one of their... My dad was... He couldn't get another service out where he lives in the country.
Yeah.
And he was pissed at DirecTV. He was pissed.
I bet. And there were people that had it but had other options that were walking away from that stuff.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, it's you can try to... Here's where we run into an issue, Rick. Here's what the problem is. Is it's bad enough we got cable companies deciding what everybody's going to be able to watch and making you pay for a bunch of stations you don't watch. And that's what they're afraid of. Is if we move to a world where it's a la carte, those networks have no reason to exist anymore. Then it becomes studios, content providers, not
right.
network affiliates.
Well, if the fishing channel don't like it, come up with some more content.
Right. Or come up with your own subscription services. Probably plenty of fishermen out there, you know. But when that happens, our networks are going to wither and die, like, probably instantly.
I'd say so.
But the problem is, when that happens, then you have to look to, all right, if all the, you know, AMC obviously would become a content provider. HBO would become a content. They already are. But, I mean, where they're creating their own programming and just getting it out to the world and making a living that way.
Right.
But what the problem you run into is then you look at who's got the pipes. Who's carrying it.
Right.
And that's still Time Warner. It's still Comcast. It's still AT&T.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, what happens if they start putting salary caps on it? Not salary caps. Bandwidth caps. I mean, they're already...
They're trying to. FCC has actually stood up for the people on that one, shockingly. Yeah.
Well, they've stood up for the people on that on a couple of occasions now, because there was a time back in 2005 where... I think I've mentioned this to you before, where Time Warner was going to start... doing caps and having tiered programs.
Yes.
But then if you went to Time Warner's website and watched movies that they were serving up, and you remember that's Warner Brothers. That's an entire
right.
studio underneath that umbrella, that they wouldn't hold that. They wouldn't count that against your bandwidth.
Right.
And it was purposefully to try and kill YouTube. And YouTube, you know...
Didn't flinch.
Well, they, and again, the FCC got involved and said, look, You can't give your own content preferential treatment. If you're going to charge people for bandwidth, you have to either charge them for all of it or charge them for none of it.
Yeah, because there was another issue that came up with that too. If you were just an internet household,
yeah,
and you were doing the whole smart TV thing, and they were going to cap you, I think it was at 300 megs a month.
Yeah,
and if you were an average family of say 4 to 5 people in the house, and you got a Netflix subscription, you're going to blast through 300 megs in a heartbeat.
Well, look, bandwidth caps to me, I mean, look.
It seems kind of stupid because bandwidth
is worse than cell phone minutes because it's an imaginary fucking thing
that
they get to jack the price up on you if you get 8 more gigs a month, which it's not like they're putting out more electricity. Well, man, I'm sure there's servers.
Not much.
But all that shit's built. Yeah, it's not like a guy has to work extra hours because you're
using more time.
It's not costing them anything more than they've already got. I mean, they're making money hand over the fist. Why do we have to cap that?
Well, and that's when you're talking about the mobile phone industry, which is a whole different animal.
Yeah, well, and again, the cell minutes have always baffled me. Like, what the hell am I paying you for? Especially when you had the per minute plans.
Yeah, the rollover minutes and all that.
No, it's a bunch of bullshit.
It's exactly what that is. And when you've got a situation where one company blinks and says everything's unlimited.
Sprint did it.
They did it.
Yeah, and they
cracked and nobody followed suit. And I was shocked by this.
Well, I think they're starting to. They're starting to. I think AT&T did, didn't they?
Oh God, no. Now I'm one of the grandfathered people that have unlimited web usage.
Right.
Unlimited streaming on my phone.
Same here, actually.
And I refuse to drop that. I think I probably pay more for it.
Yeah.
Ultimately, but
who are you with?
AT&T.
Okay, yeah. Well, AT&T's always been expensive. Sprint's always been the cheap one, but their networks,
they're brutal.
Yeah, they drop calls. Their customer service is always ranked in the top 10 worst in the country.
And I must say, AT&T's customer service has gotten better. It's not great, but their U-verse people are nice.
Yeah, they are, actually.
And I'm on Comcast Business Internet because of the radio station. And I tell you what, there's a problem, man. They're on you like that, man. And you're actually talking to a human being in America. That's the really amusing part.
Yeah.
Now, when I got rid of their television service, I had to deal with some waterhead in the Philippines, and that was...
Yeah, I gave up their television service for AT&T because I just couldn't handle it anymore. Yeah.
The Xfinity thing was like, what the hell?
I had friends that had AT&T Universe, and I was like, why the hell can't my set-top box do this? And mine's new. They just gave me these new ones, and they're still like way behind on the technological curve.
Right.
And I mean, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, all these things that are happening in internet providing, television consumption based in internet providing, telephones, it's all tied together.
It's all one thing. Now it's like how your phone and your camera and your notepad and your everything else merged into this one device. It's all happening with your entertainment streams too.
And it's only going to get ultimately, I think it's going to get better because I think what will ultimately happen is that the weak will fall away. You know, the people that provide the best content are going to stick around.
That's where people will not be promoted. I think it's about being promoted. I think if you just go get it for yourself, and do good at it. I mean, look, you either tried and failed or you tried and succeeded.
Sure.
But I think that's better than waiting for somebody to tell you to go do it. And that's the thing. If you're an independent musician these days, like some of the artists here we have on Radio Memphis, going out there and getting it for themselves,
Yeah, because one of the things that I look at, running Radio Memphis is it ain't easy.
No.
It is not easy doing what we do. And it's very scary. If somebody were to come to me and they say, hey, I want to do what you do, can you give me some advice? I'll say, run. Run far away. There are times when, and this is no joke, I've talked to the wife about this. I said, you know what? I don't know if I can do this.
Yeah.
And I think it may be time for me to go shovel dog shit over the track. And that's almost seeming more amusing to me than doing what I'm doing.
Did you give it all up for just a career in podcasting?
I don't know. I'm not seeing any money from it. it doesn't, if, as I've often said, if I could run the radio station on passion and love and concern, and then
we would be doing this from I'd be speaking to a golden microphone right now.
Exactly, sitting somewhere by a pool and having naked midgets.
You'd hear the ocean in the background.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which we're going to do that,
just the only reason I ask is, podcasts are free. Radio Memphis is free.
Mm-hmm.
We just want advertisers.
That's right.
You know,
it's not that complicated, but it at the same time,
it's just not that easy to get those. You know, I think, you know, we talked about this when you were, you know, talking about ad sales for Radio Memphis. You're struggling with getting people to understand the medium. And even with the podcasts that are out there, I mean, I listen to several of them. You know, Joe Rogan, one of my favorites.
Right.
The Nerdist, Kevin Smith's got 800 podcasts. Every one of those, you know, they all eventually, you know, if you listen to them from early on, they start without sponsors and then they get a sponsor. And usually it's a company that wouldn't traditionally, you know, it's like an internet company or a startup or somebody looking for a new way to market themselves.
Well, sure. I mean,
we just need that one brave company to make us part of their advertising budget.
We're also fueled by a younger demographic than we used to be. You know, when I started in radio, it was the coveted male 25 to 54 years of age. That doesn't exist anymore. I mean, of course, the demo is, but the one to get where the money is now is the 18 to 34.
Yeah.
And here's the thing about that demo. They don't own televisions as much as they don't even have cable.
Probably don't have CD players.
They don't have CD players.
Yeah.
The ones that have jobs are paying fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The hipster bunch. Okay.
Yeah. They're either jobless, but they've still got that
trust fund babies or something.
Cell service.
Like. Right.
Yeah. You know?
And it's that bunch when they meet somebody. If they were to meet David Letterman, they wouldn't know who he was.
Well, they probably knew who David Letterman was.
You'd be surprised.
Now, if you asked them who Johnny Carson was, they'd probably look at you like a doe in the headlights.
Exactly. And
not that that's a bad thing.
I mean, no, it's not a bad thing because, you know,
it's an evolving world. I mean, we're kind of old dogs with all this.
I've aged out of the demo years ago.
Well, but, you know, the important thing is, yeah, but you've aged out of the demo, but it's still your demo.
In a way. And by keeping myself relevant to it and not being the old guy that's trying to be
hip.
The
important thing is to not try to change it to match the way you think it should be, the way it used to be.
No, you got
to
go with it.
You got to roll with the punches, baby.
I hate Facebook with a passion, but I use it.
Yeah. You just got to roll with it.
You know, and that's the whole thing. It's the only way that, if that's the only language that these people will understand, then that's the language I will have to learn.
Well, you know, I mean, God, I wish our politicians thought like that.
Well, that ain't happening.
Well, no, because they got too much money coming their way. And that's the thing. If you had a bunch of fucking sweet cash, like Daddy Warbucks just front you money, you wouldn't give a shit about your demographic either.
No, I wouldn't care. No, no, not at all, because I would just do it.
Do it, and you got the money. We're done.
My old friend Bob McLean used to be WOTO here in Memphis. It was the oldie station. Only the oldies. WOTO. And it was, you know, Jerry and the Pacemakers, Ferry Across the Mersey, and all, you know, all these other tunes. And Bob had been around for a long time, and Bob is probably in his early to mid 60s, right?
Right.
Still in the business. He's out in, somewhere on the East Coast. He's over in the Carolinas, Virginia, that area. And he told me, I asked him one day, I said, do you see an end to it, you know, your career? He's like, oh, no way, man. That is never going to happen. What am I going to retire from? You know, this is it. And he said, this is a great line. Even if I have to do this show door to door, I will do it.
Oh, that is a great line.
And it gave me the idea to shoot something on video of a guy wearing a pair of headphones and holding a microphone and have a dish like on his back, like on a backpack, and he's knocking on the door, you know. Hey, good morning. It's 7:15. Got a cup of coffee. How you doing, babe? You know, that kind of thing.
Shoot that and put it on YouTube.
It would be hilarious. Door-to-door radio.
Yeah.
And in essence, that's kind of what podcast has turned into, because this isn't something that's broadcast onto the air.
No.
Although while we're on, I could override Radio Memphis right now and freak Doug out and have you and I doing this.
Pirating your own pirate radio station.
Pirating my own pirate radio station. But there's no point in putting this on the air.
Right.
This needs to be consumed on a one-on-one level.
Well, you know,
privately,
that Joe Rogan podcast, he's pretty ballsy. He's brave because he goes for about 2.5 hours for each.
That's a long time.
But he's successful. He's always up to the tops.
Yeah.
But he broadcasts it live and on Sirius and recorded through iTunes.
Oh, my goodness.
And he's also got video feed when they're doing it.
Wow.
Yeah. But
I've seen some podcasts that had video
No, he's obviously maximized all the output that he's got going. You know,
sure.
And why not? I mean, if that's your thing.
Yeah.
But for the most part, yeah, this could be live. It could be recorded. Who cares? I mean, that's you know, when you listen to a podcast, it's like listening to talk radio, except when you're ready to listen, it's an on-demand thing.
It is. It's the on-demand the part of it. And what's really kind of fucked up about it is that in a lot of circumstances in terrestrial radio, they're big fans of having stuff pre-taped to put on live radio, but then they'll take a live thing unedited and put it in a podcast.
It's weird, right? Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like backwards that way.
The mores have changed.
Because there's no editing that goes into this. I put the music on the front and the back, right, and I'll put a little teaser in there, and then for the next time, and then, you know.
You're going to take that one part out. But I'm kidding.
I'm not going to take any of it out.
I'm kidding.
No. If it sucks, it sucks.
The thing is, this may as well be a live broadcast, then.
In theory.
Yeah.
There's nothing stopping me from putting this on the radio.
Except when you get to your office, you're not having to be glued to your radio between whatever time and whatever time. If you're on your way to work, you know, you have to get out of your car and cut off whatever Drake and Zeke are saying so you can get to your desk and listen to WRVR for the rest of the day. You can continue to listen to what you were listening to.
Well, yes and no.
Yeah?
I'd hate to think that we would be losing there's a certain immediacy, and there's a certain fondness for knowing that what you're consuming is actually occurring at that second.
Oh, absolutely. Or at least within recent moment.
I mean, like, when we do the blues show, you know, I've recorded all these things, and I don't know what to do with them, but that's a whole different thing. I would almost be willing to sit down and say, if you want to listen to this, just tune in.
Right.
Make room in your damn life to come.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I think you got to have both. That's why Radio Memphis is unique. We got both.
We do have both.
There's what's going on now, and then there's...
And then here's what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's what Rick and Jeff talked about on Thursday night on... What day is this?
I don't know.
March. No, March. God, it's not even March yet.
It's close.
It's February.
It's February. Yeah, it's at the end of
2020. But I don't want to date this.
This thing won't be released until March.
That's right.
Sometime.
So this is just, people having a conversation about anything.
Well, the thing with Brother Doug, the second episode, that was recorded a year ago.
Yeah. Do it anytime.
Yeah. I had to cut some time references out of that, but...
Yeah, and that's, yeah, I didn't want to date this, because, you know, it's funny, I go back and listen to old podcasts from people who show I like, and it's, you know, especially if it's a good interview, or if it's just, if somebody you like, it's a good conversation.
Well, it's not like you and I are conducting any interviews, we're just sitting there shooting shit.
No, and we're not screaming at you about politics, or...
Oh, God, no.
Or conspiracy theories, or whatever else.
Politics and religion need to stay put. You know, I understand why people get so upset about it, but keep it off of Facebook.
I'm you know, it was, yes, please. Yeah, but you know, it was Mark Twain that said that people always inherit their political and religious beliefs, and seldom do they bother to question either.
Good point.
Yeah.
Very good point. Yeah. Well,
here's what's coming up on the next edition from Radioland.
I'm thinking this whole podcast here is going to be sort of a long form audio book delivered to you by the guy who would write it, which would be me. Let's be honest here. I'm one of the people that come to the school of Nikola Tesla. People have said to me, well, Radio Memphis is not really radio. You're just on the internet, so it just isn't radio. We hooked it up through Google Voice to make this work. Here's a little snippet of our interview. We do have a guy to thank for this. A cat by the name of David Ring found a way to capture what it would have sounded like. We don't know who the telegrapher is, but this is what it would have sounded like had you been on board one of the ships that had just heard that there was something going on, and this message came blasting through your speaker.
Radio Memphis is an internet broadcasting service provided by PirateRadioStudios.com, Memphis, Tennessee, USA.
That's all I got.
Are we done?
I think so.
Is this a wrap?
I think it's a wrap. I'm about ready to lay my head down now after all of that. Chewing on the it's technology. I mean, we were discussing how the technological advances, for good or ill, we're having to be faced with.
Well, you know what? It's us having to navigate these shifting waters, figure out how our place in it too. You know?
Yeah, yeah, that it is.
I mean, it's
So there you have it. Hope you kids enjoyed it. We'll be back some other time. What we need to do when it gets warmer. I need to bring this rig over to your place and sit by the pool.
We'll sit by the pool. We'll drink margaritas.
See, now you're talking to me. Yeah, because Did I ever tell you the story about how the station was made?
You were drinking margaritas?
I drank an entire pitcher of margaritas.
That's right.
And my wife thought I was really gone when I said, honey, I got an idea. We're going to build a radio station. And she thought I was crazy. And no, great things happen when I'm under the influence of tequila.
All right. Well, let's make it happen then.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. I can't wait for it to get warm.
Oh, me neither. So that'll happen soon enough. And other things, too. I wouldn't mind, you know, if this thing becomes more of a podcast, we get a lot of subscribers, a lot of people listening to it. Maybe we'll take it someplace.
There you go.
You know, I'll see if I can get somebody to come sit with us, somebody of renown. You know, it would be fun to sit down with George Klein.
Yes.
I remember the time and Elvis bought me this car.
Well, you know, have you got a line on him?
Yeah, I got his number. It's on my phone.
How about him or Jerry Lawler?
Jerry Lawler, I don't know if he's got the time. He would, you know, he's a fun guy.
Obviously, we can't get the Wolfman.
No, we can't get the Wolfman.
That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, but you never know. You never know who might be able to wrangle up. And plus, here's the thing, too. We've got the ability. I can bring in another laptop and connect it to Skype.
You know, that's doable.
And here's the thing. And I was thinking about this the other day when I was looking through Twitter. I follow George Takei.
Oh, man, he's awesome.
He's hilarious.
Man, who would have thought that guy would have had like a third life as a celebrity, as a just an internet god.
Social media god. And yes. He's so funny and very witty and he's smart. And he'll talk to anybody. And really? I don't know why we can't hook up with him.
Oh,
and
we should totally
thing
do that.
And talk about this whole thing with all the marriage equality thing. You know, I know it's a political thing, but to hear it come from him makes sense.
No, I would love to. Man, that guy's awesome. He's
and then talk
awesome.
About Star Trek.
You think he'd let you? Yeah, he will talk about it.
He will talk about it because he proudly wears that mantle.
He's not all, get a life. It was a TV show.
No, he's not Shatner. Shatner, he's another one I wouldn't mind talking to, but...
Yeah. Oh, I'd love to. Oh, all right, yeah, I'm going to out myself now. Anybody from any season of Star Trek or any show of Star Trek, I'd love to talk.
Oh, God, absolutely.
Even, you know, Data, Worf. Next Generation guys, you know.
Yeah, was it Richard Dorn? Is that what his name?
Michael Dorn.
Yeah.
Be silent before I disembowel you right here.
You don't see much of him these days.
Yeah. That's because he's got that Star Trek money. He doesn't have to do
he
anything.
He doesn't have to do
he
anything.
He flies planes and eats vegan and just
he flies planes and eats vegan.
I'm not
vegan.
Kidding. I heard an interview with him. He's just living the life, man. He travels the world, doesn't
just,
do shit.
Just does his own thing. And nobody recognizes him because he ain't in his costume.
Yeah.
And that's he's got it perfect.
Beautiful, right?
That's awesome. Who played number one?
Jonathan Frakes.
Jonathan Frakes.
He's a big time TV director.
Yeah, he's a director, and I think he's even backing off of that a little bit. You know?
Yeah.
He just kind of.
You know, when they put that, when they re released it last year on Blu ray, I mean, they all got a little pay bone.
Oh, my God, yeah. Marina Sirtis?
Oh, yeah.
Lord. I've seen her
Counselor,
naked.
Counselor Troy.
Yeah, she showed up naked on a Google search.
Did she?
Yeah, she
you sure
did.
It wasn't like Photoshop?
Uh-uh.
All right.
That was a still from some film she did.
Oh, you have to. I'm going to Google that when I get home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, there's that. And then, I'd talk to any of those cats.
I mean, yeah, I'd talk to anybody. Hell.
But yeah, I mean, with the Skype, yeah, we could hook up. And they could hear us, and we could hear them, and it'd sound good because it's a nice, clean signal coming in there. We're not complete idiots.
No.
We can make this shit happen.
Well, let's do it.
I just have to get a hold of some people.
Well, let's make it happen.
All right, we'll make it happen. All right, so there you go. We'll see y'all next time. Thanks again for coming in.
Thanks for having me. I always enjoy it, Rick.
Absolutely. We'll do it again soon. See y'all later.